We're on? Okay. I hope to include, hopefully, most of the questions that were sent. Could shift over a little bit so there's more room. You can sit here. I hope to answer most of the questions that were sent. If I leave any out, please feel free afterwards to ask. Okay, just I think there are four issues that we're going to discuss tonight. Four general issues, so you know where we're heading and when to have your questions. First, we're going to talk about the bedika and bittul chametz, which is something that has to be done every year. Emphasis: bedikas chametz is the one that has the most halachas. Taaroves chametz will be our next discussion. Taaroves chametz mixtures, that has to do with cosmetics and perfumes and toothpastes and medicines and all of that. So that will be the second issue. Then we'll talk a little bit about kitnios, the minhag of kitnios, what it is and where it came from. And then fourth, we will discuss hagala, which is the term that is known as kashering everything in the kitchen. Hopefully we'll get to everything in the kitchen, out of the kitchen, the barbecue, and the all items hopefully will be covered. And again, if any questions remain at the end, feel free during or afterwards to ask. Okay, so I gave you a couple of the Shulchan Aruch that we're going to discuss. If you want to look in, there are some over there. If not, feel free to just listen or take notes, whatever you'd like. Bedikas chametz and bittul chametz, and biur chametz. We know there's an isser to have chametz in one's possession. There's an isser, we just started. There's to have chametz, a number of prohibitions that apply on Pesach. Number one, we're not allowed to eat chametz. Number two, we're not allowed to benefit from chametz. And number three, we're not allowed to have even chametz in our house. And that's why we have to get rid of all our chametz, or we also sell certain areas of chametz in our house. But that is what the Shulchan Aruch says in Siman Tav Lamed Aleph, B'tchilas Leil Yudalad B'Nisan, that's right in the first page, at the beginning of the night of the 14th of Nisan, which we'll get to in a minute, both Kenes HaChametz L'Or HaNer, we search out for the chametz by the light of the candle, B'churin U'Bestakin, in the cracks and the crevices, okay, in all places where chametz might be. We'll get to the details in a minute. But first, a general point about bedikas chametz. Number one, it is a mitzvah midirabanan. It's a mitzvah midirabanan for every man and woman to perform bedikas chametz. One person could do it for others. One man, the man, the woman, can be a shliach for the rest of the house. But it is a chiyuv incumbent upon every man and woman. Chazal say that we attack the chametz problem in two ways. We do both bedikas chametz and bittul chametz. We both search and destroy, and we nullify verbally. Though mida oraisa, though biblically one would suffice, because after all, if you destroy your chametz, you don't have anything to nullify. Or if you nullify your chametz, it doesn't matter that if it's meaningless. It's a house full of chametz, but I nullified it. So even though mida oraisa, even though biblically one would suffice, either bedika, searching out and destroying the chametz, or bittul, nullifying the chametz, we do both. We do both of these. Why do we do both of them? The Mishnah Berurah explains at the bottom of page 1 that there's a downside for each. Let's say I would only do bittul chametz. I would only nullify my chametz. So I say all chametz is null and void. I think it's like dirt. And I'm going to walk into my house. I'm going to see some chocolate chip cookies there. I'm like, And I might forget. I might come to eat it. Or even not, I might say, oh, those are good, I'm happy I have those. So I'm going to undo my bittul, I'm going to say this, the kol chamira, I'm going to say the special version of bittul chametz, nullifying the chametz. We're going to talk about the two different versions, that we say the night before chametz, the night before Pesach, the day of Pesach. But I might find chametz and I might come to eat it. Or I might go back, I might retract. Oh, that's that, I'm glad we have that schnapps, I'm glad we didn't spill that down the sink. So I might retract on my bittul. So that is why we not only do bittul, but we rid our house of any chametz around. Obviously, we put away any that we sell in a separate spot, but that is why we don't only do bittul, but we also do bedika. We also search and destroy the chametz. But, says Chazal, as well the other way as well. We don't just rely on bedika, or destroying the chametz, but we also do bittul. Why? Because it could be that I searched and cleaned my house, but maybe the kids are going to be playing on the cushions, or I'm going to sit down on a cushion, and the cushion's going to move on paper. I'm going to see a Cheerio. I'm going to find the Cheerio underneath. I searched. So if you don't do bittul, you have the worry that your bedika will not be complete. So that is why, because of those two reasons, Chazal say we have a two-pronged attack to prevent us from violating Baal Yirah, Baal Yimatzi, from having chametz in our house. We both, number one, search and destroy and rid our house of any chametz, and B, we also nullify any chametz. I'll just mention it now. There are two stages of the nullification that we do. There's one after the bedika on the night before Pesach. We say, and we have to know what this means. It's important that somebody, whoever's saying it, should make sure that everybody listening, the husband and the wife, should both know what the kol chamir means. It's only three lines. You can say it in English also. Kol chamir v'chamir v'tika b'shusi. It's a whole version, but there's a slight difference between that which we say at night after the bedika and that which we say by day before the sobzman beer, before the end of the time of burning the chametz. And the difference is that at night, I still want to have breakfast the next morning. Let's say a few weeks ago, let's say that Tuesday night before Pesach, the night of Adikas Chametz, you want to eat breakfast Wednesday morning. You want to eat your last Cheerios. You want to finish off the toast. So you don't want to nullify all your chametz on Tuesday night, and then you can eat breakfast the next day. So if we look at the version closely of the night bittul says, any chametz of mine that I don't know about, I nullify, and it's like the dust of the earth. That's the version that we say at night. But in the morning, after we burn our chametz, then we say a more inclusive version. Any chametz, whether I know about it, whether I don't know about it, whatever it is nullified. It's like the dust of the earth. Those are the two bittles that we do, but we do one at night. That's the slight difference between the one we do at night and the one we do by day. But either way, that is the basic idea of why we do both bittle. Please see this over here. Bittle and bedikas chametz. We nullify and we check our house for chametz. Okay, a couple of points about bedikas chametz. First of all, when is it done? It's done, as the Shulchan Aruch says, at the beginning of the night of the 14th. People should come up from work on time, or not on time, early, and everybody should be home and search for the chametz. That was the takana. The takana was done at the beginning of the night. Where does one have to check? Where does one have to check? So the Shulchan Aruch says, b'chol ha-mekomos shederach l'haklishon chametz. Any place where chametz might be. So again, this is emphasized, and I emphasize this every year. If one wants to use Pesach as an opportunity for spring cleaning, for cleaning out the back of the garage where the leaves and everything else get, that's fine. That's wonderful. But you might want to do first what you have to do, and then what you want to do. Right? So again, only places where chametz could be, not where dirt could be. Where chametz could be, that's what has to be searched out and clean for Pesach. So again, a bathroom, if one washes their bathroom and keeps it relatively clean, so there's probably not chametz in there. If you look at where the detergents are underneath and under the sink, again, you could do a little search at the front, but all the way in the back, that's the chametz is in there. So you don't have to be bodek there. You don't have to check any place where chametz would not be. Okay, that's the when, and then we have where do you have to look, and now we get to the what. What are we looking for when we do bedikas chametz? What are we looking for? So obviously, a kezias of chametz is something that we're looking for. If it's the size of a kezias, then I violate Baal Yerba Yimatzeh, so I'm looking for a kezias of chametz. But Chazal say, I'm even looking for something less than a kezias, because even less than a kezias could be edible. And that is why, the example I gave before, if you find a Cheerio's edible, it's less than a kezias. And if somebody eats a Cheerio, they're not allowed to eat a Cheerio, even though it's less than a kezias on Pesach. So that is why we are looking not only for something that is a kezias, but even if it's less than a kezias. But, and here is an important caveat that the Mishnah Berurah says. I don't think I gave it to you, but the Mishnah Berurah says, if it's less than a kezias, but it is gross, it's disgusting, and you would never come to eat it, then you don't have to worry about it. This is going to become important for about cleaning ovens, which we'll get to a little bit later. But if it is less than a kezias, and nobody would, if it's a big piece, then again, you should get rid of it. But obviously, most of the time, we're searching the pockets. So crumbs are edible. That's why we search our pockets. Because crumbs are edible, even though they're less than a kezias, they're still edible. Under cushions, please, there's room over here. Under cushions, anything that could be edible is a problem. But if you see in the corner of, like, in between your fridge and under the fridge, there could be Cheerios or whatever that rolled there. So you have to move the fridge a little bit to get to, because that could be a problem. But if you see in between your fridge and the counter, and you can't move the fridge, and you see it's like putrid gook there, that nobody's going to ever eat that, then it's not a problem. It's not a problem, because that's not edible. If it's less than a kezias and it's not edible, you don't have to worry about it. That's what the Mishnah Berurah says. There's no bayir abayi matzeh. If it's a kezias, then you have to worry. If it's less than a kezias, you have to worry if it's going to be edible. But if it's less than a kezias and it is disgusting and one would never come to eat it, then that is not considered chametz that you have to worry about. So that is what you are looking for. What do you say when we do it? This is something to remember. It's one of the four brachos we only say once a year, even in Chutz La'aretz. right? I'll be your chametz. Before we start doing the bedika, we say Baruch Hashem Alkeinu Melech Olam, Hashem Kedushanu B'zot Tzivanu. I'll be your chametz on the destruction of chametz. We're not going to destroy it till the next morning, right? We're not going to burn it till the next morning. But bedika, the search, is the first step in the process of destruction, and that is why we make the bracha before we start the process. I'll be your chametz. Okay, we should all be having an eye to be yotzei. Again, we'll talk about the other three later on, but that's one of the brachas that special, be able to say it. Again, if you're not going to be home the night before, we'll get to it in a second. But that is the bracha that we say beforehand. One should try not to speak, the Shulchan Aruch says. I'll give you on the next page. We're not going to read so much inside, so make sure we cover everything. Shulchan Aruch says, one should make sure not to talk. Again, you can let the machine get the phones during Bedikas Chametz. Make the bracha and start the Bedika. One, for sure, make sure not to talk from the bracha to the beginning of the bedika. If one talks during the bedika, one does not have to make a new bracha. One should try not to, talk during the bedika. You should focus on what's happening. But if one has to talk, let's say you get somebody in the family needs something during the bedika, it is okay to talk and to whatever, as long as somebody stays doing the bedika. But that is the bracha. That said, after the bedika at night, as we said before, the first version of the bittul is said. Any chametz that I don't know about, that I don't see, that I have not searched out, should be batal. The next morning, after we burn it, so then we say the other, more inclusive version of the bittul, which is kol chamira, any chametz that I, or any leavening agent that I know about or don't know about, including everything, should be batal. That said, the next morning. Okay. How is a bedika done? So this is just a question that I get every year. The Gemara says to use a candle. And that's what the Shulchan Aruch says. Why dafka a candle? So there are a few steps in the stages of the takana of the law of the Gemara. In the days of the Gemara, what's the only way to get into the corners? To look onto the beds? With a candle. Right? The sunlight is not going to get in. So that's why the takana was to use a candle. That's step one. Step two is, when is a candle most effective? Not during the afternoon. So the candle most effective at night. So that's step two. So Chazal said you should use a candle because that's the best way to get it all into the nooks and crannies. Number two, the candle is most effective when it is used at night. That is why the takana to do the mitzvah of bedikas chametz is done the night before Pesach. Why don't you do it erev Pesach in the morning? No, but then a candle is not effective. The Gemara says a candle in the daylight is meaningless. So that's why we use a candle and we do it at night, and all Klal Yisrael does it together the night before bedika. The night before Pesach, that's when you do the bedika. Bizman hazeh, there are some sakana issues when it comes to candles. There are some danger issues. You don't want kids walking around with candles. So again, the Gemara, though, has symbolism with the candle. So it might be a nice idea to start. Like, make the bracha with the candle and, like, get the first piece with a candle. Then you can blow out your candle and you can use flashlights. Okay? The Ber Moshe says it already. One does not have to continue in a dangerous situation, especially with a bunch of people in the family searching. You don't have to use the candle. If you want to be Yotzi the Minhag, you can light the candle at the beginning and walk around with it to the first room. Then you blow it out, give everybody a flashlight, and you can continue. Because again, that's our candles. The best way to start under a bed, we don't use candles today. We use flashlights. So be Yotzi the Minhag to start with a candle, and then you can switch to flashlights. There is a minhag that's quoted in the Shulchan Aruch. That's why if you just turn the page once, you go to page, the third page, in the end of Siman Taf Lamed Beis, in the Ramah. The Ramah says, Hagah, it's on page Dalad, it says page Dalad on top. Hagah, the Ramah says, V'noagim lahaniach petite chametz b'makom sheyimseim habodek. Right, this on this page, on page Dalad on top, is a minhag, which is the case in most families, for there to be 10 pieces of bread put out in order to find something, so that the bracha is not a bracha levatala. After all, you said a bracha to destroy the chametz. If you don't find any chametz, then it wasn't that retroactively a bracha levatala. So that is why the Ramah says that's what this minhag developed. And already in the times of the Gemara, there are hints to this minhag. But the Ramah adds, if it's not your minhag, don't worry about it, because really the bracha isn't specifically to find and destroy, it's to search. And if you find, you're going to destroy it. But lav dafka, you don't have to find. So again, if one has the minhag, you should keep the minhag. So minhag is a very, very ancient minhag. You should keep the minhag. But one should know that even if you don't find, it is not a bracha levatala. But it is very important that you do find all the ones that you put out. Okay, it is two points about that. Number one, if the children are putting them out, an adult should accompany them to know exactly where they go. Okay, there are big problems with knowing that you only found nine. you know, that's so it's you know, everybody should know, like, the kids want to do it, so you'll accompany them and go to each of the rooms, because it's really should number one, know where they are, know where all the pieces are, and number two, don't use something that causes crumbs, that crumbles a lot. Use something that's what? You could put it in a bag, but you're gonna burn the plastic. So you got, right, I mean, if it's fine, yeah, it's right. You can empty it out. But again, when you empty, you got to make sure there's no crumbs. So just use something that's not crumbly. You know, it's better to use, I don't know, a piece of a hard bagel, whatever you have left, a piece of a graham cracker. But any case, just try it. Just common sense to try not to use something that causes a lot of crumbs. Last point in Bedika. What about if somebody is going away for Pesach? And what if somebody is not going to be home the last night before Pesach? So, if somebody is going away before the last night before Pesach, one does a bedika the last night that they are home without a bracha. Without a bracha. The bracha is only said the night before Pesach. Because the bracha is al biur chametz. This searching is the first step to destroying. But if you're not going to destroy it the next morning, you're going away on Sunday already. So you're doing your bedikah on Motzi Shabbos, you're going on Monday, Sunday night. So then you do a bedikah the last night you're in the house, but you do not say a bracha, because it's not the first step to the beer. The beer is not going to be done the next day. There is a major question. Let's say you're going away for Pesach, but you're leaving Erev Pesach. You're leaving Erev Pesach. Let's say you're going to be home, you're going to a hotel in the mountains, you're going to leave on Wednesday morning. So you're going to be home Tuesday night. So there is a major machlokes that if you're going to sell your entire house, as we'll talk about a little later, let's say you're not going to be home at all, you can basically close up your front door, nobody's going to go in, and you sell your whole house. You don't sell the house, you sell the chametz, and you lease all the places where the chametz is, which is basically your whole house, because you're not doing any searching. If you're going away, you don't have to search. You can just close the front door and then leave. But the problem is, there are some shittos that say, if you're totally, the car you have to do. If you're going to be in the car, you got to make sure there's no chametz in the car. But there wouldn't be, right, so some posts could say you should even include the car in the bedika. Others say you just got to make sure to clean it, but it doesn't have to be included in the bedika. But I don't know if you'd make a bracha just on a car. But it can be included in the bedika. That's fine. It's different shittos. But again, it definitely has to be cleaned. You want to include it in the bedika, that's fine. What was I going to say? So there is a major machlokas, though. If I know that I'm going to sell my entire house, or at least my entire house to the non-Jew, and by the time Pesach comes along, it's not going to be owned by me, do I have a chiv to be bodek? So that's a major discussion, and we are machmir in terms of maybe not making a bracha. So that is why, if on the forum, I don't think I have one here, but on the forum, if you see a forum, if there's a section that says, on most of the, the ones who are machmir over this, on the Shtar Mechira, it says, I sell my whole house, except for blank. And you fill in bedroom, you fill in living room. Meaning, even if you're going to sell your whole house, you might want to leave one room, which is not so hard to clean, you know, one of the bedrooms. And in that way, keep that room to yourself, and you'll have a chi of bedika, and you'll be able to make a bracha on that room. Because that room is staying yours. That room is not being sold. That is why if somebody's going away and they don't want to lose the mitzvah, you know, why should you want to use, you're going to go away, but you still want to do the mitzvah. There's a mitzvah to do bedikas chametz for any night as long as it's a month before Pesach, tonight. If somebody's leaving tomorrow and not going to be coming home until 3 weeks after Pesach, so you do a bedikas chametz tonight, as long as it's within a month of Pesach. So why do you want to lose the mitzvah? Even if you're not going to make a bracha, it's still a mitzvah to Rabbanon. So that is why there's a suggestion that even if somebody's not going to do any cleaning in their house, they're going to close up their house and leave, but it's a nice idea to have one room that, don't choose the kitchen, you know, but one room that is, that chametz goes into, it has to be a room that chametz possibly goes into, but you're going to search out, and in that way, you'll be able to do the mitzvah. Okay, that is bedikas chametz. Any other questions about that? That is bedika and bit. What about office? So you have to clean the office. Again, you do it beforehand. You don't have to do a bedika there. If you don't sleep there. If you don't sleep there at all, it's not a dira. So it's a place that you're going to be. So you have to, again, I have tamid in the dorm rooms. They have to do a bedika in the dorm room the last night they're there. But at office, you just clean out your cubicle, clean out the office, whatever it is. Okay. Next topic. Ta'aroves chametz. Mixtures. So again, there are many shittos about every single item in this category. Again, I'm just going to give over what I have from my rabbeim, and that is Rabbi Willick holds that any cream, lipstick, cosmetic, toothpaste, anything that is not liquid, is not a problem, and you don't need a special kosher of Pesach hechsher. If you want to get it, wonderful. But toothpastes and creams and lipsticks, anything that type of consistency is not a problem. Liquids are a problem. Liquids, because they are, let's go back a step. Why are they not a problem? Because they're not edible. Not edible. If it's not roi lachilas, then it's not something you have to worry about. It's not called chametz. But if it is edible or drinkable, so then it could be a problem. So that's why liquids are much more drinkable than the other items. So mouthwash, perfumes, liquid toothpaste, any of those which can be drunk, that should have, again, you just got to make sure that it's okay. And most of them are okay. Scope, all these others, you've got to check the list to make sure that they're okay. But that's what one has to worry about. But regarding the others, Ramosha's Mako, regarding many of these, one is, all of these do not need a specific hechsher kosher l'Pesach. Again, there are many shitas out there about this, but this is an opinion that one could be so mechan. What about medicines? What about medicines? So again, many paskin, the Shmir Shabbos paskins this way also, that any pills are not a problem. If it's just a pill that you swallow. And this includes Motrin and Tylenol and acetaminophen and all those, anything that's not flavored. It doesn't taste like anything. If it's chewable or if it's flavored, so then you have to check. Then you have to be worried. A lot of the kids' medicines, it's flavored, tastes good, so that's definitely drinkable. A lot of them want it. They want it more. So again, that one should make sure one has kosher l'Pesach, the drinkable chewables. But again, anything tasteless and anything bitter is not a problem, and therefore does not need a kosher l'Pesach hechsher. Okay, that is regarding medicines and mixtures. Yeah. We're getting to Kenius right now. Getting to Kenius right now. So the next topic, Laura just let in, was the issue of Kenius. So Kenius, just to give background, Kenius literally means legumes, beans, other types of vegetables. So if you look for a second, I'll give you the background to this. On page Mem Zayin, which is just turning the page, it says page Mem Zayin on top. It's the fourth page of the Shulchan Aruch. It's on the back. The Shulchan Aruch says, Elu dvarim sheyotzim behem yidei chovas matzah. The following five ingredients you could use for matzah. Chitim, seorin, kusmin, shibola shual, v'shifon. It means the five types of grain. Your matzah can be made of wheat, spelt, oats, rye, or barley. Right? Any of those, you could have barley matzah, you could have spelt matzah, you could have wheat matzah. Most of us have wheat matzah. Right? The Ramah says the minhag is to take chitim. But matzah can be made out of any of these five. Somebody asked me on Shabbos, remember my wife's grandmother was allergic to wheat. If you're allergic to wheat, you have spelt matzah. Right? They have Baruch Hashem. We live in a time when there are a lot of substitutes, and we can still be Yotzi or Mitzvah Daraisa. So again, those are 100% fine. That's what the Shulchan Aruch says. It can be made with any of these five, any of the five grains. Aval lo ba'orez, you can't have rice matzah. Ubashar mini kitnios, or you can't have any other bread, any other matzah that you make with anything other than the five grains, that is not called matzah for your mitzvah. Vegam, but the Shulchan Aruch adds, ain't about mudechimus. There's nothing wrong with having them, but they just don't become, they can't become chametz, so therefore they can't become matzah. That's the rule. Only something that rises and is called chametz is called matzah. So no matter how much you bake a rice cake or let it rise, it's not going to be called chametz. So therefore, you can't use it for matzah. Umutu lasas miyam tafshil. The Shulchan Aruch, Rabbi Yosef Kairo says, you can use them. So according to Rabbi Yosef Kairo, if anybody's from Sephardic descent, they eat beans and corn and rice. And all of these, again, there are different Mesorahs within the Sephardic community. Different people, different countries have different Mesorahs about what they eat, what is called kitnios, what's not called kitnios. But if you look in the Gemara, if you look in the Shulchan Aruch, nothing to do with chametz here. The only issue is whether you could use it for matzah or not. You can't use it for matzah, but you could eat it. But then comes the Ramah. The Ramah, based on Rishonim already. Already the Ritvan Rishonim already, hundreds of years ago. The Yesh Osrim. Some say you can't even eat these on Pesach. Forget that you can't use it for matzah. You can't even eat these on Pesach. V'haminag v'ashkenaz l'hachmir v'ein l'shanos. And the minag is to be machmir. And this is ein l'shanos. We don't change this. This is a minag that Bnei Yisrael have accepted upon themselves for thousands of years. It's already from a thousand, but at least almost a thousand. That we've shown him from a thousand years ago. They have already accepted this. What was the reason for this chumrah? So again, various approaches given in the Rishonim. The Mishnah Berurah here quotes a few of them. They used to be very difficult to separate the kitnios from the wheat. They were always mixed in. They didn't have such fine separating instruments in those days. So how could he be so sure? So maybe there was some wheat mixed in. Or maybe if you use this for, if you're able to eat this, you might use this for matzah. Many various different reasons given. Whatever the reasons are, it doesn't really matter to us. This is the halacha. This minhag has been nikva and quoted in Shulchan Aruch for many years already. And we are not maker when it comes to kitnios. Unless, says the Mishnah Berurah, b'shas hadchak, extenuating circumstances, then we might be makel. Obviously, we're not makel by nisa daraisa. We can't eat chametz unless somebody's life is in danger. But when it comes to kitnios, which is an ancient, ancient minhag, it's not din, it's minhag, but it's a minhag that became din, so that is why there are kulas. And that's what comes up every year by certain baby formulas. Certain baby formulas are made out of kitnios, and that is, again, you have to make sure. Some of them have other grains mixed in. So you got to call the pharmacist or from pharmacist to make sure you know exactly if it's pure kitnios. But if it's really pure kitnios, some of the rice dreams, some of the other stuff, if somebody's allergic to milk, if they have that, you got to call up and make sure it's just kitnios, no wheat. But if it is, so then one can use it for children. If that's what they eat, so then that's considered shas hadchak. Yeah. Nobody had an answer. I'll try to find out if you like, if you have a specific... Right.
But I had a very hard time with any of the rice streams. No one really wants to give me an answer. Okay, I'll try to find out.
Okay. Okay, but again, that's at least that's the halach. If you can find an answer, that's the that's what that we would say. Again, generally for kidneys would be okay. If you're serving kidneys to somebody in the family, you have to have separate kalim. Because you can't cook the kitnios in your kalim, because that'll make your kalim kitnios, and we don't eat kitnios, even in kalim. So again, that is, and the Shulchan, and the Mishnah Berurah even adds, we don't eat kitnios on the last day of Pesach. Right? This day, when he's excluding the minhag of gebrux. Right? That is, my family, my father, we don't eat gebrux the whole yontif, except the last day of Pesach, we eat gebrux. That's a separate minhag, which we're not going to get into tonight. But again, that's kitnios is not that. Kitnios, the minhag is, we don't eat it, even the last day of Pesach. Yeah. Yeah. Well, it might have been washed hats with other chametz kalim. Yeah. So you have to have separate bottles. New bottles. Okay, and that leads us right into Chavi, thank you, into kashering. So let's talk a little bit about kashering, making your kitchen kosher for Pesach. So before we get into specifics, a couple of yesodos, a couple of basic ideas of backgrounds, and then we'll relate them to the different areas of the kitchen. Number one, we should remember the difference between tevilas kalim and kashering kalim. Tevilas kalim is what one does when one gets a new set of silverware, when one gets new utensils, new other things that are made of metal, that are made of glass. Those materials, we don't tovel plastic, we don't tovel china or stone, but if it's made of metal, it's made of glass, then there's a mitzvah of tevilas kalim, which means something that was made by a non-Jew, there's a mitzvah to sanctify, nothing to do with treif, right? They're new, they were never used, then we know they were never used. But there's a mitzvah midrabanan to sanctify the kalim that we are going to use, and we tovel them, tevilas kalim and mikvah, in cold mikvah water, and in that way, and we make a bracha al tevilas kalim, or al tevilas kalim, because it's adding sanctity, tosefes kedusha. That's tevilas kalim. That's not what we're talking about tonight. Tonight we're talking about what's called hagolas kalim. Hagola is only one of the ways, but it's really kashering kalim. Kashering kalim means if there's something not kosher about what's in your utensil, or what's in your item in the kitchen, and you want to get the thing that's not kosher, you want to get the not kosher taste out of that, so you have to somehow get it out. And that's nothing to do with adding kedusha. That's ridding. That's like the sur meirah. That's not asei tov. That's sur meirah. So the removal, that's why there's no bracha on kashering. Because removing something that you don't want, you don't make a bracha on. You only make a bracha on adding kedusha. That's why when we go to the mikvah with the kalim, we say a bracha. When we're in our kitchen and we're blowtorching, if we would, you know, that we wouldn't make a bracha. We'll talk. Most cases does not need a blowtorch, as we will see. But that's the difference between hagala, a tvila, and kashering. Because Man Chazal, remember, this topic was much more relevant even from today, because they didn't have two sets of dishes, they didn't have two sets of anything. You know, so you have to kasher everything. But then again, you look around, now it's Baruch Hashem, what many people have, but still you walk through the streets of Mea Shearim, on Erev Pesach, you have these humongous cauldrons of people bring all their stuff, and they just, you know, dunk everything in, you just take it back, and you have it. There are different levels of and methods of kashering, and we'll see which method is needed. Just to go through from the easiest, the lowest to the harshest, and then we'll say what the rule is. One way is just to wash something off with cold water. That's mayim karin. We'll see how could that kasher something? That's one level. The next level up is what is known as hagala. Hagala is boiling hot water. Hagala's kalim. Lahagil is to dunk something in boiling hot water. Going next up is what's called libun kal, light, little, easy fire, libun kal, which we'll see what that is, but it's defined in the Shulchan Aruch as a straw. If you put a straw to the hot item, the straw would burst into flames. That's libun kal. And then we have libun gamur, which is a blowtorch. That's real libun. That's what sparks fly from the not just if you put a piece of straw there, it would burn, but sparks fly from the heat. That's 800-900 degrees. So those are the different levels of kashering. There's cold water, hot water, libun kal, libun gamur. The general rule of thumb, and this is what we're going to apply in almost every case tonight, the general rule of thumb, it's said in the Gemara in Pesachim, kebolo kach polto. Just like it went in, that's how it goes out. Kebolo, like it was swallowed, from the word boleya, kach polto, that's how it spit out. So as we're going to see, in every case, however it got in, that's basically how we're going to assume that's the way to get it out. Okay, so again, I'm just getting the rules, and then we're going to apply them. The Ramah has an important principle, just on the next page, which I gave you on page Memvav, where the Ramah says, on top, where it's underlined, Alkei Nagu Shelo Lahagil Shum Kli Ben Yomo. There is a minhag, and we try to keep this minhag, not to do hagala, where hagala is needed. Hagala is the dunking into the hot water. We don't do it on something that's been used for 24-hour hot previously. In the past 24 hours, it has been used for something hot, hot chametz, hot trape, whatever it is. The minhag is not to be magil within 24 hours. That's why we're going to get to a 24-hour waiting period by certain items. That is the Ramah. And just the last rule, and then we'll get to the applications. Generally, you can kosher almost every material. Generally, wood can be koshered, metal can be koshered, stone can be koshered. Cheres cannot be koshered. Cheres, if something is considered earthenware, it cannot be koshered, like china. Right? Earthenware cannot be koshered. We will get to differences between Pesach and the rest of the year when we talk about glass and plastic. That's what we will get to. But in terms of the same, the rest of the year in Pesach, that is at least wood and metal and stone. Okay, so now let's go to various applications. Okay, first sinks. Let's talk about sinks. So if somebody has a stainless steel sink, most sinks are stainless steel, very easy way to kosher them. Don't use them for chametz, hot chametz for 24 hours, and then pour boiling hot water all over the sink. And it's koshered. That's it, again, because why? Because there wasn't ever a fire on this sink, right? The most it was boiling hot something dripped on it. So the way to get rid of boiling hot something is to pour boiling hot something on it. That's the rule, kebolo kach polto. That is why if somebody has a stainless steel sink, you could just don't use it for hot chametz for 24 hours. You pour boiling water on it, and you do not need any type of cover. You not need anything, and you have to pour it over the handles, pour it over everything. And in that way, and you pour it from a chametz tikka pot or a Pesach tikka pot? So you can pour it from a Pesach tikka pot if you have one. But again,
and a regular pot?
And a regular, like a hot water. Right, it does not have to be, we're not machmir, I mean, some are machmir, but one does not have to be machmir that it's still connected to the wall. Right, you can have just a regular teapot that you boiled up on the fire, on the oven, and then you pour it over the sink, and then it's kashered. Does the kettle have to be a kosher Pesach kettle? It's better to use a kosher Pesach kettle. Yeah.
You just said you should use a Pesach pot to do that with?
If you can.
And if not? Because I have an issue with my sink and my stove that I do my stove left, and I can't put my Pesach pot on the stove.
Okay. I think it's okay if you use the other one also. Yeah.
Use the sink for cold?
You could use the sink for cold, yeah.
So you could run the water?
Yeah, you could run the water as long as it's cold. Because we say that by cold, nothing's going in, nothing's going out. It's all cold. So you could use it for cold. The bigger problem is porcelain. Porcelain sinks. If somebody has a porcelain sink, that's considered cheres, and that's not kosherable. So you have to get some type of insert in order to use that for a Pesach. Because we assume hot stuff fell in the sink. You know, there wasn't only used for cold. So that is when it comes to six. What about the fridge? Number two, the fridge. So in general, we wipe out the fridge, we clean out the fridge. The minhag Yisrael, and once you keep this minhag, is to line the shelves. Again, really, me'ikar hadin, you don't have to line anything once you clean it out. But many people line. You put some type of cover on the shelves because you don't want the same. Sometimes in the corners, it's a little harder to get out. Even though we spoke about before, it's all gooky in the corners where the shelf touches the wall. So you do the best you can. And again, it's a chumrah. It's a chumrah. And but again, many have that minhag to line the shelves. Okay, ovens. How do you clean the inside of an oven first? The inside of an oven. So, of course, there are two types of ovens. There's the self-cleaning type of oven and the non-self-cleaning type of oven. The self-cleaning type of oven, self-cleaning has the halacha, according to most poskin, as libun gamur. The hottest libun. And therefore, all you have to do by a self-cleaning oven is, you don't have to wait 24 hours, you don't have to do anything. That minog is only by hagola. But all one has to do is just to wipe it out a little bit, try to get rid of as much of the shmush as you can, and then put it on a self-cleaning cycle, and then that's it. Then that's what? You don't have to go crazy. You don't have to go crazy with the scrubbing. Again, if it's going to come out, it's going to turn to charcoal, you know, after the self-cleaning, and then you'll sweep it out. So then it's, again, if there's mamushes, you see real mamushes there, that looks like, you know, you have a burnt french fry in the bottom of the oven, you know, as you try to get out the pieces, the mamush pieces. But, yeah?
The spaces where
the door?
Right.
We'll get to that. We'll get to that in a second, yeah? I don't know, what's that, a couple of hours? 3 hours? 3 hours? 3 hours? That's plenty.
Excuse me, can I just repeat what you just said?
Yeah.
For a self-cleaning oven, you don't have to wait the 24 hours.
No,
because it's,
you don't.
Because it's hard work.
It's
around the street, so I learned from my room test in the shoe like 10 years ago. Oh.
No, okay, that's fine, but no, I'm not. There's not a competition. I am not in the same. There's different leagues there, but okay. Everybody has their own. Everybody has different sheets. This is what I learned from my rebbe. That's all. One cycle. That's it. That's by a self-cleaning oven. What about a non-self-cleaning oven? Rav Moshe. Rav Moshe holds that a non-self-cleaning oven needs to be blowtorched. That's what Rav Moshe says. And according to Rav Moshe, that's why he suggests to get an insert. Many poskim are against Rav Moshe. Rav Aaron Cutler, Rav Soloveitchik, and many others held that a regular oven, you say the rule, kabolo kach palto. It didn't get hot by a blowtorch, so it doesn't have to get kashered by a blowtorch. That's why many poskim, and one could be so mech on these poskim, that if you don't have a self-cleaning oven, let's say you have an upper oven that doesn't have a self-cleaning cycle, so then all you have to do is to clean it out well, make sure there's nothing left, and just put it on the highest for an hour. And then it is kasher. And again, you don't have to wait the 24 hours here either. What? You don't need an insert. No, according to Rav Moshe, you need the insert. According to Rav Moshe, this isn't going to help, and therefore you need an insert. Unless you have a blowtorch, according to Rav Moshe. But according to Rav Aaron Cutler, according to Rav Soloveitchik and others, one can kasher it. There is a chumrah that some achronim have about the oven door. They say the oven door doesn't get as hot. Again, I spoke to a number of my rabbeim about it, and they said, again, the rule is kabola kachpolto, and that is, it doesn't, the same way that it gets hot to begin with, it gets kashered. So therefore, one does not need, again, you have to make sure there's nothing in between. You have to clean that area. But again, one does not need a separate covering on the inside of the oven door, because however hot it got in the first place, that's as hot as it's going to get when you kosher it. So therefore, again, self-cleaning, or clean it out and put it on by non-self-cleaning.
And the oven
racks, if they're in for the self-cleaning cycle, so then but you have to make sure that, you know, if they want to maybe take them out, like put them a little, so there's space. So the whole rack is open to the self-cleaning. Because sometimes if it's closed in, it's touching the wall. And therefore the sides of the racks are not going to get self-cleaned. But as long as they're in there, you can put in a little, you know, what? So you don't have to, again, if somebody has separate racks for Pesach, then fine. That's fine, have separate racks for Pesach. You could go by separate racks. That's not a problem. But the oven itself, this is how we kosher the oven. What about the top of the oven, what we call the burners? So first of all, we'll get to glass in a minute, but in between the burners, most ovens is metal. So it's metal, we kasher with hagala. And that means not to put, make sure that not have any hot chametz drip on the in-between parts for 24 hours, and then pour boiling water on them. Some do an added chomer, and that is to cover it with tinfoil. If one wants to do that, fine. But again, me'ikar adin, you have to, you know, the fire doesn't get there. The most that something happens is something drips on it. So therefore, so too, don't wipe it down, make sure it's clean, don't use it for hot for 24 hours, and then pour boiling hot water on those areas. That's the areas in between the burners. In between, you have four burners, so in between the burners. What? Is it porcelain? If it's porcelain, if they are porcelain, we have an old one, we have a metal, but if it's porcelain, then you got to cover them. If it's porcelain, you have to cover them because porcelain is considered considered cheres, and you can't kosher it. Again, many cover anyway with heavy duty tinfoil in between.
Just clean and cover.
Yeah. Minug is to do it, but you don't have to go crazy with the cleaning. What?
If it's metal,
me'ikar hadin. Again, many people cover it anyway, but me'ikar hadin. If as long as you do hagala, you know that is what. That's in between the burners. But what about the grates? Right now, I'm going to talk about the grates. Shh. What about the grates? So, it's Baruch Hashem. We live in a society you can just go to the hardware store and get new grates for Pesach. So that's the best thing to do. Get four grates. It's a one-time expense. You buy four grates, whatever it is, $25, and you can have new grates for Pesach. Sorry? The metal, the black grates? What? The newer ones. Okay, I don't know. But again, if you could put the grates in your self-cleaning oven. Okay, I'm saying so. So number one, if you could put grates in a self-cleaning oven, that's fine. That's kashering them. If not, if you have grates that aren't so fancy, you could buy new grates. So again, it's a one-time expense. So even if it's $200 altogether, $200 for 30 years, you know, it's not the, you know, you always put this away with your Pesach stuff. If you, we'll get to that, but if you want to use the same grates, then you have to clean them very well, and then leave the fire on until the grates get red hot. And once the grates get red hot, then they're koshered. Right. What kind of black? Pesach is black,
Kosher? I
guess. Okay, but again, why do you have to put the black on? Because that gets it, makes it even hotter? Okay. Okay, as long as it gets red hot, it would be okay. So until it get red hot, however long it takes, 20 minutes? Either one, right, either one. Okay. What about... Yeah. So the grates, so you could buy the black things. Black things. So you can... You don't want to buy new ones. So again, you have to clean them very well because there's all type of stuff that dripped on it. Clean it very well. Again, you could line it if it's not hard to line. Line it with the heavy duty tinfoil. You know, it'll take and that's right if you can with the tinfoil to catch on fire. You can line it. Yeah, my mother always lined the grates. You can line the grates with tinfoil, heavy duty tinfoil. That's it. It doesn't catch fire. So again, if that's what I just said before, if you clean it very well and then you put it on until it's red hot, that also koshers it. Just put it on until it's red hot. So that is burners, and if somebody has an electric burner, the coils, so then just clean them very well and again put them on until they're red hot. So that also that koshers them. So let's get to that now. So what about a glass stovetop? Glass stovetop. So glass stovetop is a problem. Why is it a problem? It's not a problem, I should say. It's a problem according to many poskim who say you can't kosher glass for Pesach. Let me say it that way. And that is, I'll tell you what to do though, what you have to do. And that is because if you look in the Ramah, if you want to turn the page for a second, if you look at the last Shulchan Aruch that I gave you, the Ramah quotes that though the whole year we kosher glass, the minhag of Ashkenazim is not to kosher glass for Pesach. That's what the Ramah quotes on the last page where it says page 88 on top. So you can't do hagalah, but you can't do a blowtorch because it's gonna break it. So that's why. What do you do? And you can't cover it with tinfoil because that's gonna melt it. So what do you do? So there is one of my fellow rabbeim has this, and last year he called the company and he got a whole special glass stovetop just for Pesach. And he said he's not a handyman and he puts it on himself. He said it was $200. You have to call the company and see if it's possible. I had to call the company. They said it was this friend of mine told me it was 200.
Every year.
But the question is it, no, is it, what do you mean, a new oven, is that $200?
It basically costs, by the time you're done, $400.
Is that a one-time thing? Is that a one-time thing? Oh, so I don't know about this company, because this guy did it himself. This guy did it himself. Uh-huh. And maybe it depends on the... what? Maybe. I can't say, but then maybe... Okay. Right. Again, right, so you might want to buy a cheap oven for a different oven for Pesach. But in general, that's the Ramah. The Ramah says, the Ramah says that we don't kasher class for Pesach. So again, if it's possible to have the one-time expense and reuse it every year, you know, then one can. Again, you have to. It's a, you know, if there really is no other choice and you can't get some other type of oven, you know, then it's again, are we going to be mekel b'shas atchak? You know, for this, is it a real shas atchak in the society that we live in to have to use this oven? So that's a question we have to ask. But in general, that is we try not to kasher glass for Pesach. That is the discussion of ovens and stovetops, etc. Okay, microwaves. So this is a major machlokas aposkim. Again, it's there are a number of great poskim on both sides. Many say that a microwave can be kosher. After all, microwaves, a lot of them don't even get hot on the inside. You feel the walls of the microwave after you cook in there, it doesn't get hot. So the way, according to the poskim that say you can kosher microwaves, what you do is you wipe it out clean, you don't use it for 24 hours, and then you put a cup of boiling water in it, and you let it steam up, and that koshers your microwave. But many poskim say that works for the whole year, but not for Pesach. First of all, it's very hard. Sometimes by the fan over there inside, this stuff is always splashing around by the microwave, and it's very hard to clean it. Which we'll get to kalim that are very hard to clean in a minute. But first of all, it's very hard to clean. B, most microwave insides are plastic. And Rav Moshe says not only do we not kasher glass for Pesach, we don't kasher plastic for Pesach. So that is why Rabbi Eider, Rabbi Wulig, and others hold that one should not kasher the microwave. Once you just get, you know, we have a separate microwave for Pesach. Microwaves aren't that expensive. You can buy a $35 microwave. And remember, as Rami Rabbeim said, it's for 3 days. For 3 days during the year, 2 days of Chol HaMoed, 1 day of Pesach. It's not, you know, you could also, you know, work on the stove. You know, there was a time before microwaves. You know, there was a time. So again, if there are poskim that say one can, but the most, again, if the inside is metal, then you don't have a problem, because kashering metal is fine. But if the inside is plastic, you know, again, this is a one-time expense. You just put the microwave away with your Pesach stuff if you want to get it. Again, in general, I think we can't go 1 day without a microwave. So let's say if we can, so we'll buy a $40 microwave. You know, just put it in the box and take it out for 3 days every Pesach. Again, and that would Rav Sternbach also says one should not kasher. Again, but that is the issue with microwaves. Yeah.
So let's say I don't want to kasher my microwave and I don't use it for Pesach. Can I leave it on my counter?
Yeah. Yeah, as long as you just clean it out. Toaster, we'll get to it in a second. It's hard to clean out. To clean out a microwave is not a problem. Even if you see stuff on it, it's probably gross and it's not edible, as we said before. So a microwave is not a problem. But toaster, we'll see in a second.
But if I know this sounds totally bizarre, but let's say I...
Because you might come to use it. Put a piece of tape on it.
Where should I put it?
Put it in the garage.
No, my garage is kosher.
So you could put it, just cover something. I mean, you could put... Just cover it. Cover it. Put a piece of the sticky shelf stuff on it. Right? So that way it won't be used. Yeah. Right. So again, a microwave, there's a heter of the Chacham Tzvi, where the Chacham Tzvi talks about cheres, where like usually we don't kasher it, but if it hasn't been used for a year, for 2 years. So again, we usually use that as a sniff, as an extra added condition, but we're not going to be makel just based on that. But again, in general, there are poskim that say you can kasher microwaves.
Right, but
so again, I'm not saying one.
Say
I don't know if it'll make a difference.
Again,
Pesach, we have extra chumers that we don't have, is Chamitza Zasar B'Mashehu and other chumers. So I don't know if they would change their shita. What about some? Yes, just pour it over the faucet also. Pour the hot water over the faucet. Plastic. There you go. Replacement faucet. Okay, let's
just
the water comes out.
The whole handle part, you could screw it right on the hose, and it's really cheap. It's like
Okay, let's just finish up with a couple of other miscellaneous items. Somebody asked this question. I'm trying to, hopefully I included most of them. Blechs and hot plates. Blechs and hot plates. Somebody asked, could you use your chametz stick blechs and hot plates for Pesach? In general, you have to clean it very well. I would say clean it and cover it with a double layer of aluminum foil. And if you do that, then you could use it. If you want to use, let's say you only have one hot plate, so clean it and line it doubly. So even if the first layer comes off a little bit, the other layer will not come off. If I have black on a hot plate, just clean it and double line it. Other kitchen items: kosos, bechers, kiddush cups, whatever you call them. So that, how do you do kasher? How do you kasher them? So do you hagalah? You don't need hagalah. You never put anything hot in there. Right, so Meikar Hadin, again, the minog of many people is to bring, if you ever had hot coffee in there, then you can. If you've washed them in a hot dishwasher, so then you have to do Hagala. But a lot of times, kosos, you just rinse in the sink. And I'll probably, you don't put the silver cups in the dishwasher, because you don't want the silver to be ruined. So that is why, what? You wash it with boiling hot water?
Wash
it with boiling hot water?
It's not gonna
be yes, so let us bow. Again, in general, if you wanna be model them to be extra precautions, that's fine. But again, if you know for sure that you only use it for wine and you rinse it out and it's cold, so then all you have to do is rinse it out and it's cold. But again, it's yeah. Doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. Okay, what about tablecloths and napkins? I think somebody else asked me this. Tablecloths and napkins you could use. I mean, generally we have separate ones, but if you put it through a washing machine with detergent and they basically come out clean, they're like new. So again, if one wanted, let's say somebody has only one tablecloth, that's the whole table, that for the long table, one can use it. But again, you know, Baruch Hashem, in our day and age, you know, most of us have separate Pesach stick ones and Chametz stick ones, so you might want to just have separate ones. Counters. So again, most of our counters are Formica. So Formica is a hard plastic. So based on what Ramosha said before, we don't kosher plastic for Pesach. So, but we try to do a double Shmira. And that is, we do Hagala and then we cover. And Meikar Hadin, you don't need both. You don't need to do Hagala if you're covering it anyway, but maybe the cover will come off, maybe it'll get ripped a little bit. So for Mica counters, like these tables, for Mica, we would do Hagala on them, and then cover them. That's by most. What about granite? What about granite counters? So if somebody has a granite counter which is smooth, there are no cracks or bumps in it. If it's a smooth granite counter, so Meikar Hadin, granite is stone can be kosher for Pesach. So all you got to do is do Hagala. Not to use it for hot chametz 24 hours, and then do Hagala on it, and then, you know, granite or marble, you know, pour the boiling hot water, and then you do not have to cover it. The only issue is, which I'm not sure about, is my mother-in-law told me, she just got her kitchen done, she got granite counters, she got this extra special sealant. That is a stain-proofing sealant that they put on, and the rub of hers, again, I haven't looked into it, I have to call the company, they said the rub of hers, it says that sealant ruins it. That ruins the fact that it's not considered
stone.
It's not considered stone anymore. Rabbi Reisman says no with that sealant.
Therefore, you still have to cover it.
Right, you still have to cover it, exactly. But if you don't have that sealant... You have to know if it's a sealant that prevents, if it bubbles up every time something spills on it, so then you know it's totally sealed, that it's not called granite anymore. But if you just got the regular stom granite, you didn't get any extra special seal. Okay, reseal it after Pesach. Okay. Yeah. Regular for Formica counters. Do you have to wait 24 hours? Again, you're going to cover it anyway, so it's a chumrah. You know, you can wait 24 hours, if it's possible to wait 24 hours, for hot chametz. For hot chametz, doesn't mean that most of the time we're not using hot stuff anyway. So for hot chametz, you have to wait, yeah.
Okay, so with the hot water and the granite,
yeah.
I mean, all these interesting people,
I can
figure out these. So
yeah.
I was told from Rabbi William when I was,
yeah.
Before just boiling water in the center of the granite, making sure the hot water gets all like the granite.
Okay.
He
wants you to do directly on all the areas.
Every spot has to hit okay. Hot water, and you go like this.
Okay, you move around. You move around. You don't go crazy. You move around. You don't go crazy. What? What? By granite, if it's Meikar Hadin by granite, you don't need it unless it has that special seal. Right? You move around. You move around your hands. You move around and you kasher it. What about, somebody asked me about steaming. What about steam? Somebody has a steam gun. Is steaming hagala? So that's a major machlokas. It's a major machlokas whether you could steam, or Moshe discusses it, others. It's better to do hagala. Hagala is what Chazal said. It's steaming hotter, but steam might not get in all the areas. So it's better to do hagala than steaming. That's agreed upon by all. But just two or three more points, and then we'll finish. Formica, yeah.
When you said hagala, and then boiling water?
Boiling hot water, and then cover it.
If
you have the plastic things that go over the counter. So again, me'ikar hadin, the hagala is extra. So we do it just to be, in case it moves. The backsplash. So yeah, do hagala on the back, because things might splash there. That's why it's called the splash. Yeah? What? Right. No, usually, unless you have a thing. If you could cover it with tinfoil, you might as well. Right. Again. Right, with the oven or the... So the back of the oven. Again, so it depends. Depends what, if you want to cover it. It's Recha and Zaya. There are issues of Recha and Zaya. Okay? Every minhag has something to rely on. Okay, just two more issues and then we'll finish. Toasters and mixers. Toasters and mixers should not be kosher for Pesach. And the answer, the reason is, the Shulchan Aruch says, anything that has any kli that has a lot of cracks, that has a lot of nooks and crannies, which is very hard to clean, then should not be cleaned. Again, a toaster, it's very hard to get out all the crumbs. And a mixer, especially a mixer. You have a mixer that you put a whatever it's called. You put the mixer, what's it called again?
The KitchenAid,
thank you. The KitchenAid, yeah, up in the middle of the KitchenAid, there's flour flying all over the place. It's very hard to clean that. So again, once you're not kosher, a mixer and a toaster. Last thing we'll talk about is two more things. So barbecue. What about a barbecue? So if it's possible to get new grates, so get new grates for Pesach if you can have them. If not, let's say you don't make the size, whatever it is, then again you have to clean it very well and just leave the fire on until it gets red hot. And then it could be kosher. Again, it has to be cleaned very well. Also, barbecue might be in that category of not being able to be cleaned very well. There's so much stuff on it, you might want to just get the new grates. And the last thing, somebody asked about dishwashers. So again, most of the dishwashers, the inside is plastic. So we don't kosher plastic for Pesach. If somebody has an inside with stainless steel, so then you get new racks because the racks are plastic. So if you get new racks, put a cycle on. And also, you have to know if this is in the category in the down in the middle there. There's so much schmutz that gets caught in the centrifuge, whatever it is on the bottom. You have to make sure that's cleaned out also very well. If it's plastic, then it's again. If you get replacements for everything. Anybody wants to? Okay. Let me just finish so we can finish.
With soap.
So then one would be able to do that. But again, one has to if one has any type of plastic in there, so then we don't kosher for Pesach any of the plastic.
Yeah.
Oh, I remembered something before that I wanted to say just before I forget. If somebody koshers a microwave, though, the glass on the bottom can't be koshered because that's glass. So that is why, even if you're going to rely on the postman that kosher the microwaves, you have to either get a new one or double line that, not to use that from chametz. Okay, I think we got most of the kitchen items. Any other? Yeah.
Glass tabletop.
So cover it. No, just cover. What you're going to put something on it that's not going to move, right? What are you going to do? Put it. Like what? No way to put the, what do you mean? To see it? No, I don't think it's, to see, you shouldn't see chametz, right? But if you shouldn't have your chametz that's sold, can you change the tablecloth? Yeah, I mean, you're not using it. As long as it's clean and you cover it, so then keep a cover on it. Food directly doesn't, unless food does ever go directly on there anyway. You always have a tablecloth on and a plastic and, okay? Yeah. That would be kosher glass top. I mean, I don't, right. I mean, it's, after.
You had said that we don't buy
again, but yeah, but like how? But how would you do it? Hagalah? Does Hagalah work on a glass? What glass? Up? Somebody told me I have to check the Star K that they might have said something. I have to look into that. But again, but if you rely just on the straight that the glass top is glass, I have to see if you can get a replacement, see how much it is, and then depending on the expense and on the tircha, then we could see if it's a bidyevet situation. Okay, everybody should have a chakashiv sameach. Any questions from here till Pesach? Please feel free to ask.